Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to a new edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name is Patricia Traina. I cover your New York Giants for the Maven, for Inside Football, Big Blue View, Forbes, and a bunch of other places. So always appreciate you coming on with me and listening, and lots to talk about. The day after the New York Giants' first preseason game, it was a 31-22 win over the New York Jets. And the storyline that is just absolutely dominating the headlines today was the play of the quarterback, specifically Daniel Jones. So we're going to talk about Daniel Jones. We're going to talk about Eli Manning, and then we'll talk about the other quarterbacks that the Giants had play the game, just to kind of give you an overview, because it is an important position. And who better to come on the program with us to talk quarterback than the Locked On Podcast Network's very own quarterback guru, Mark Schofield. Mark, thanks so much for taking the time this morning to come on.
Oh, Pat, it's great to be with you. It's exciting to talk about football again. I'm looking forward to it.
Got to talk Daniel Jones. It was a small sample size. What did you see from him? What did he do well, and what didn't he do well?
Well, as far as what he didn't do well, I don't think there's anything to list in that category. I think it's important to sort of preface that, you know, I wrote for Big Blue View last night into this morning. I titled it sort of The Era of Unbridled Optimism. And that's sort of a throwback to a Tony Kornheiser quote that he had when Steven Strasburg made his debut for the Nationals. He was on the radio the next day and he said, you know, just let the optimism wash over you. That's how I feel Giants fans should be feeling this morning, because after an offseason when there were people like me questioning the merits of taking him sixth overall, wondering, you know, would his skill set translate to the NFL, potentially identifying a path where it could. He came out and I think did everything right. I think the offense, Pat Schumer in particular, they were smart with how they handled him. Of his five throws, four of them came on first and 10, so he was thrown in some advantageous situations. But I think perhaps his most impressive throw might have been the third and eight, the third down conversion, where he saw a different, more exotic look from the Jets defense pre-snap. A pressure package look. They did indeed come after him. And what I loved about that play, Pat, was if you watch his footwork on it, it's a three-step shotgun drop, but he speeds it up. He cuts it short because he knows that the pressure is coming. He knows the blitz is coming, and he has to get it out of his hands. And he makes an anticipation throw on that out route to foul. And then, you know, the next play is the touchdown. So I was extremely impressed with him. I also thought, look, you saw anticipation throws. You saw it on the first throw he made, that in cut where he made ball's coming out before Latimer makes his break and he puts it right on him. You saw some process and speed on that RPO slant that he threw to Golden Tate, where he had to make sure that throwing lane was clean before he let the ball go. You saw him freeze a defender with his eyes, that crossing route that he threw off of play action. You had that backside flat defender that was in the area. He had to use his eyes to freeze him on a potential throw to that swing route to the running back out of the backfield before throwing that crossing route. Because if you don't freeze that defender, he's going to get in the way and potentially break that up or pick it off. But look, anticipation, footwork, process and speed, ball placement, he checked a lot of boxes. Now it's just five throws. It's just one drive. But I think Giants fans right now sitting here in August after this offseason and the buildup to this moment should be feeling pretty happy right now.
Mark, how many of those reads? To me, it looked like every single one of those reads that he had to make were his first reads. I mean, do you agree with that, first of all? And second of all, do you think that was by design or just kind of how the play kind of worked out? And do you think that was a good step forward, you know, especially now his first preseason game against, you know, a different defense, a defense that can be exotic?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the five, the first throw was his primary read. That RPO slant to Tate was his primary read. I think that X out that he threw on third down, that was his first read. I think you can make a case that the touchdown, that flat seven smash concept where you're reading the corner in the flat and you're reading that from the seven route, which he eventually threw to that route in the flat, which would have been the tight end. And then that crossing route that he threw off of play action, that's sort of a two-receiver concept there too, because again, you're sort of high low in that flat defender backside between the cross route from right to left and then that swing route out of the backfield. But, you know, three of the five were his first read and the others were like rather simplified two read concepts. But at the same time, I think that is smart because confidence. And when he finished that drive, I was texting with some people, I was DMs. I was telling people they got to sit him down, like forget the weather, like sit him down, just sit him. let the other guys play because I don't think it was going to get any better. And they eventually, that's what they did. The results, it's nice to see. But you want to see sort of the execution, thought process, and the placement, like those types of things. And those were all A pluses, I think, from him last night.
You mentioned that it was smart for them to pull him out after that first series. I'm just curious why. What's the benefit? I mean, he's not, you know, eventually when he takes over, he's not going to play one series and then give way to his backup. So why not get a larger sample size? And you know, to piggyback off that question, what would be your plan as far as game reps for him next week?
Yeah, I think the way I view it, and again, this might be sort of a facet of my own mental capacity or perhaps incapacity when I was playing the position, but confidence is so important for a quarterback, particularly a young quarterback. When you start to doubt yourself, when mistakes pile up, yes, you have to fight through that and learn how to play through adversity. But for his first taste of NFL action, I thought sitting him down, such as fate turned out to, you know, create that situation, but sitting him down after that drive would have been a perfect way to sort of give him that initial jolt of confidence. Like, look, you can do this. You've just had months in the world's biggest media market of yahoos like myself saying this wasn't a smart pick. You've just proved them all wrong on your first night. Yes, the mistakes will eventually come. The interceptions will come. The errors will be there. But I thought sort of giving him that huge confidence boost out of the gate would have been the perfect way to sort of put a close on his introduction to the NFL and his introduction to the New York Giants. Now, fate had it play out that way. I'm sure other people would have thought, you know, if that game continued right on, that he should have played. I mean, I don't know if Pat Schumer addressed that, but I think sort of sitting him down, just letting him soak in that confidence boost was a smart thing for the mental side of the game for him. As far as going forward, you know, I think you've got to see a situation where you want to see him take I'd like to see him next week play second quarter and into third, because I think at some point you want to see him sort of have that sort of halftime transition, you know, throttling down, throttling back up, give him more play time. And then, you know, I don't know how much they have planned for Eli Manning in the third preseason game, that usual dress rehearsal, but I do think he should see some significant time in action. That I thought it was smart to give him time with the first team offensive line too. I think that was smart to get him some reps behind that group, because that's going to be good. It also helped his confidence. He had great protection on his drive, particularly that crossing route for play action. And so that's how I would have handled it, and that's how I figured they should handle it going forward.
Now, you know, Coach Shermer after the game did say, you know, when people said, well, what would be your response if, you know, they want to see more of Jones, his reaction was, you know, let's slow your roll. That there were a few mistakes made, and even Daniel in the post-game locker room said, you know, there were a few things that he did, felt that he could have done better, a couple mistakes he made. For example, on one play, he forgot to motion the tight end and stuff like that. You know, I'm going to chalk that up to probably, you know, I don't want to say jitters, but maybe overexcitement of being out there and stuff like that. As that calms down, though, I mean, you know, what can he take? I mean, if this performance, you know, statistically speaking, from an execution standpoint, was so perfect. So what can be learned from this, Mark? Usually you learn from your mistakes, but what lessons can he take from such perfection?
That he can do this, that he belongs. And I think that's huge for quarterbacks, young quarterbacks, that, you know, especially with the start and the rollout that Daniel Jones has had, this idea that, look, no, there's a reason we drafted you six overall. And maybe other people don't see it. Maybe some people in this building don't see it. But there's a reason why you're on this roster, and there's a reason why we view you as the quarterback of this franchise going forward in the future whenever we decide to make that switch. And so I think that's part of it. And I think also, you know, you mentioned forget it's a motion attendant and things like that, which are great points. There's things that will go into every single play, even the handoff, the run calls, that he could probably improve on, whether it's, you know, cadence things, whether it's execution, out of the huddle, all the little things that, you know, maybe wasn't asked to do on a down-to-down basis coming out of Duke, or while he was at Duke, that you're going to be tasked with doing in the NFL. And so there's the baseline confidence, which is going to be big, but learning that you have to be as close to perfect as you can be on every single play, not just the throwing downs, not just the passing plays, is going to be big for him. So I think this was a great first step for him, but obviously there's a lot of work left to be done.
You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina, special guest Mark Schofield. We're talking Giants quarterbacks. We're going to take a break, come back, and we're going to talk about the rest of the Giants quarterbacks. So stay with us. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. Here with Patricia Traina and special guest Mark Schofield. He writes for Inside the Pylon, Big Blue View. He is also the Locked On Podcast NFL Network's quarterback guru, and can't think of a better guy to be talking football with on a Friday, especially after a preseason game. And Mark, let's talk about Eli Manning. Again, small sample size, not a very, you know, at least to the naked eye, not a very effective size. I think he had one pass attempt and it was, you know, he missed a wide open Red Ellison down the field. I mean, I don't know if you took a look at that play, but what did you see from him? Is this pretty much a continuation of what we saw last year from him, or, you know, what did you see?
He didn't see much. I mean, it was just the one, you know, rollout where he ended up sort of checking it down. He did have an option downfield. Like you said, I think that this was more of a sort of punch in, punch out type of plan for him. Get him in to the first series, get a couple of snaps, and then get him off the field. I think that they sort of wanted to handle this as just a cameo appearance for him, and that's somewhat understandable. I do think that the bigger sort of area to think about when it comes to Eli Manning is where he was last year and what makes sense for this franchise right now and going forward. When you look at some of his play last year, you see some question marks in decision making and execution. I know people have been wondering about velocity and things like that out of OTAs and into training camp. You know, looking at him as I did last week for Big Blue View and some of the throws from last year, you know, I came down more on the side that it's a decision making process that he really needs to sort of recalibrate, I'd say. Trying to remember, if you will, the start of the Giants year last year, when there were so many checkdowns and people wondering, will they take chances downfield? And then later in the season, as it went on, they tried to be a bit more aggressive, trying to find that balance with his skill set now and his level of execution now, with being aggressive slash being conservative at times and making the right decision with his throws. I think, you know, as long as he keeps playing, I think that's going to be the critical issue for him. Because look, if you want to make the case of maybe the velocity isn't there or there's a drop off in his ability, that it's all the more important that he makes the right decisions with the football. Because if he can't make some throws, then he needs to take that into account when making decisions on where to go with the football from the pocket. And so the decision making part is, I think, going to be critical for him. And that's what I'll be watching as this preseason rolls on and into the regular season.
If affected that decision making process, if indeed it has been affected, I mean, is this a byproduct of playing behind a shoddy offensive line all these years? Or was he just, you know, is it the change in the scheme? What do you think's behind that?
You know, I think there's probably a constellation of issues. I think you can make the case that the change in scheme is going to be part of that, because even for a veteran, like learning some new terminology and learning some new designs and route concepts and what you're being asked to do, that's going to play a role in your decision-making. I think the offensive line and some of the problems that this offensive line had and some of the pressure he faced played a role. As a matter of fact, there was a recent piece by Ted Wynn from Athletic talking about the run game and the value of the run game. And Ted, after that piece came out, it was a fantastic piece, but he listed some notes on Twitter that didn't make it into that piece. And one of the things that he listed was that, you know, NFL teams are tracking the hits that a quarterback takes over the course of a game and over the course of a season, how that impacts their efficiency. And I actually dug into that a little bit, and using expected points added per play, I looked at a number of different quarterbacks and the amount of hits they took over the course of a couple of different games. And one of them I looked at was Eli. And when he got hit six or more times a game, his expected points added on a per play basis per dropback swung to the negative. And you didn't see that with young quarterbacks. Like, there was a game where Dak Prescott got hit 10 times and his EPA per play on a dropback basis was still positive. You saw that with some of Eli's peers, Brady, Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger. They still would play well on an EPA per dropback basis when they were getting hit 7, 8, 9 times a game. But with Eli, the pressure seemed to get to him a bit. And so protecting him is going to be critical. And so I think you put the pressure, you know, the offensive line woes, the new system, and if there is sort of a drop-off in velocity or placement or whatever, he's starting to feel that around that as well. Those are three pretty big issues, and you put them all together, that really sort of can impact your decision making and performance. Sometimes you think, look, I can make this throw, and you can't, or I can hang in here a second longer because I'm going to have time, and you actually don't, or, oh, wait, this design, what are we looking for here? And before you know it, the ball snapped, and you've got guys breathing down your neck. And so you put that all together, that can make for a tough situation. And then, you know, with a season like that under his belt, now perhaps he's a little bit better going forward, and then he can sort of recalibrate that process. But that's why I think sort of decision-making and these all of these tangential issues are going to be critical for him.
You know, I think back to David Carr when he was with the Texans and how he got beaten up, and that really kind of ruined him, I think. You know, he just never reached the potential that he had and became very jittery. Eli has been beaten up. Has gotten beaten up pretty much, you know, the last several years. And I'm just wondering, can a quarterback, you know, recalibrate when he's been, you know, almost conditioned, if for a lack of a better term, you know, playing behind a shoddy offensive line? Or, you know, how tough is that really for a quarterback to do?
Difficult. And so for some veteran passers and or even younger passers, you know, as you said, the Carr example, you could look at Deshaun Watson and how they're trying to manage him right now. And obviously, with Eli, as we've been talking about, it's tough when you've been under duress so much that it really sort of speeds things up to an almost unexecutable point in your mind where you're taking your first two steps in a drop and you feel like you have to get the ball out, even though it's a five-step drop concept and the routes aren't going to be anywhere close to throwable yet. You know, it makes it that much harder to execute. And, you know, with Eli, as I just sort of walked through, the numbers kind of bore it out. The more he got hit, the less effective he was on a per drop back basis. Now, the thing that's going to help, I think, is we expect the offensive line to be a bit better this year, number one. And number two, if they've – and we saw it with how they handled Daniel Jones and his drive. A lot of these were quick, you know, 1 to 3 step drop type plays where you're getting the ball out of your hands very quickly. That's obviously going to be a big help for a quarterback because it's hard to get home as a defensive lineman when the ball is coming out. Think back to Tom Brady and that clip of him against the Chargers in the divisional round when Joey Bosa was like, man, you're throwing the ball too fast. You know, you can't get home if it's a 3-step and out situation as a defensive lineman. So that will truly help him. And if, you know, when I came on to talk to you about Daniel Jones after the pick was made, I said, look, if they're going all in on this West Coast offense, it might work. It might work also for Eli in protecting him and keeping him clean, giving him some easier pockets to throw from and getting the ball out of his hand. You might not see those pressure numbers mounting. You might not see him lack that efficiency on a per-snap basis like we saw last.
You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Chayna and special guest Mark Schofield. We're going to take our final break, come back, and we'll talk about the rest of the Giant quarterback. So stay with us, folks. Welcome back to Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. Mark Schofield is the special guest. He is the quarterback guru of the Locked On NFL Podcast Network, and he does a great job inside the pylon, Big Blue View. Just if you're not reading this man's work, folks, you are really missing out. Do check him out. Mark, let's talk about the remaining quarterbacks on the Giants. Alex Tanny, who many times Pat Shurmur has warned us not to skip over. He had himself quite a night, you know, playing, I think he took the lion's share of the snaps. Then he was relieved by Kyle Lauletta. Tanny going 14 of 19, 190 yards with a touchdown. Lauletta 9 of 12, 116 yards. He had a touchdown as well. Also was sacked, I think, once. You know, decent nights for both of them. I mean, what did you see from those guys?
Yeah, I thought these were two good nights from both of them. I like Tanny coming in after the play. You look at the touchdown. It's, again, another similar, like, RPO slant-type design, but he throws an absolute bullet on the slant route to Shepard for the touchdown with perfect placement. And I think Schumer is right when he might make that case. Look, don't forget about Alex Tanny. And the fact that he was sort of the third guy in after Daniel Jones and you had 19 attempts, I think, you know, speaks a lot about how the organization might feel about him. Because we all know, and we're seeing this play out right now, as we get through the preseason, there will be injuries. There will be teams that will look to acquire quarterbacks, whether it's because know, they've had injuries or they're not pleased with the production they're getting from some of the guys on roster. Philadelphia right now is in a situation where they might look to acquire a quarterback with Nate Sudfeld having that broken left wrist. And so both Tanny and LaLetta looked good last night. I think Tanny played better, but both of them were efficient. You know, both of them had nice quarterback ratings, had good completion percentages, seemed to run the offense well. You know, LaLetta did have the one sack for, you know, a loss of 2 yards, but had a touchdown pass as well. There's an idea here that you've got four quarterbacks. You probably only are going to keep three. One of those guys, Tanny or LaLetta, could be moved for something. And the fact that they played well last night, I think, is a very good thing for this organization in the big picture.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually pleasantly surprised because, you know, LaLetta's kind of been a mystery. And, you know, we saw him in the Washington game where he kind of, you know, wet the bed, so to speak. And, you know, for him to bounce back, especially given, you know, the knee injury and the ups and downs he had last year with the, you know, the run in with the police and everything, just to put all that aside and, you know, bounce back from that. But I want to stick with Tanny for a minute, if I could. You know, Tanny's a guy, you know, who has bounced around a lot, hasn't played a whole lot. When a quarterback is doing that, when he's not getting those live reps, especially in the game, I mean, how can he, you know, we hear the term mental reps, but to me, mental reps is like, okay, I envision myself riding a bike, but until I actually do it, I don't know that I can do it. So how can a quarterback especially kind of bridge that gap between not playing and, you know, being ready for when he is, you know, called upon?
Yeah, and a lot of people sort of look at mental reps and wonder the true value in them. And there is some from that sort of mental profile standpoint where you guys get that on, you're listening to the play call, and you know, like, these are my reads, these are my checks, these are my pre-snap cues, like, this is what I want to see. And you sort of walk yourself through the play as it unfolds, like, all right, look, you know, this is what we're called here, this is my read against single high. Okay, they rotated at the snap to too high, now this is what I have to do. And so it's, you know, almost like playing Madden in a sense, but it does help in a sense. And for guys like Tanny, guys like LaLetta, you know, you have to sort of do that because you're only going to get so many chances. This was a point that was made, you know, when I was watching the Eagles game from last night. This morning, Ross Tucker was talking about how with the new CBA rules, there's no more double sessions. It's one practice a day. There's only so many reps to go around. You have to make each single one count. And so you have to make the most of the other opportunities, including just watching, observing, and going through those mental reps.
Just, you know, backing up a little bit, you played the position. So for those not familiar with what actually transpires on the sideline, you mentioned, you know, you get the call in, you get your pre-snap reads. Can you just kind of elaborate a little bit? And I know every coach is probably different, but just elaborate on what is actually passed down to the quarterback in terms of information through the headset.
Yeah, I mean, in most indications, whether it's, you know, an NFL team getting the call from the sideline or a college team that's sort of like signaling in plays, like, you'll get that play call. And so you know right away, okay, say, for example, it's 5-8-5, A cross, B shoot, B check shoot or something like that, which is the random call that we had in college. At 8-5, you have the receiver on the left is running a 5 route, a comeback route. That receiver, your tight end, in most cases, is running an 8 or a post. The outside receiver is also running the 5, that comeback route. And then your A back, which is your tailback, he's going to, you know, swing or whatever I said, and the other B, check, shoot. He's going to check and then run a shoot route. He'll check protection first. So that's the play call, and this is other stuff, formations and protections and things like that that will get relayed into you. But so from the time you get that in your head to when the ball is snapped, you are going through what your pre-snap indicators are going to be, what your reads are going to be, and how you will react to whatever coverage you see. So, for example, on that 5-8-5 concept, if we saw single high, cover one, cover three coverage, we would read weak side to that X receiver on the comeback and then to the back out of the backfield. If we got middle of the field open, cover two, cover four, you're going to quickly look at that post route from the tight end, trying to split those two deep safeties, and then come to the comeback route, the five route on that side of the formation, and then to the back out of the backfield to that side of the formation if he's allowed to release. That's the fullback. So that's what you're working through up until the ball is snapped and you see what you actually get. And so as you walk into the line of scrimmage, you're checking the corners, the safeties, you're trying to get a pre-snap read. And so you might be in a situation where right up until the snap, you're thinking it's cover one, so I'm throwing weak side, say, to the left, because that's the read against cover one, and then they spin it to cover two at the snap, and now you have to recalibrate, come back to the other side of the formation with your eyes, check that tight end split in the post route, the two safeties on the post route, then to the five route, then to the, you know, back out of the backfield. That all happens in what, 40 seconds while people are trying to hurt you? And so that's why, like, the mental reps matter, because you could be sitting there on the sideline and you hear the play call come in. You know, you'll hear the coach call it in, or if you didn't hear it, you'll ask the guy that's right next to you doing the chart, what's the play call? Oh, it's 585. Okay, so cover one, I'm reading this week. Cover two, I'm reading it strong. You'll go through that. And then as the quarterback on the field's walking, you know, to the line of scrimmage, you say, oh, I see it looks like one. Oh, now they rotate the snap to cover two. Now I got to read 8-5 to back. Like, that's what happens, and that's what you can do when you're just standing there on the sidelines watching the play. Obviously, it's then when you're on the field, you have to like go and do it. But these are the things you can do observing from the sidelines, those sort of mental reps that allow you to at least walk through the process of what's going to happen in that condensed period of time. One of my favorite pieces ever over at Inside the Pylon, I wrote it. I'll try to dig it up. It's called Decision Making Doesn't Happen in a Vacuum. And I walk through all of that from like getting knocked down the snap before to like getting the ball out of your hand and taking a shot on the very next play. And you know, when people say that, look, hitting the baseball is the toughest thing to do in sports, I kind of agree, because I was full at baseball, Pat. When I was playing high school baseball, I was a great shortstop, but they would use the DH for me instead of the pitcher because I couldn't hit. But as a quarterback, though, nothing compares to having to do all of that with everything else that is going on in just one single pass and play. There is so much to digest, and that's why when people say, you know, you'll see people, and sometimes I'm guilty of it too, like crush a guy for missing a read or something. It's like, do you realize how much they have to do on a single play?
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Mark, final question. I know you touched upon it a little bit in the first segment, but if you're Pat Shurmur, you're planning the quarterback play for the second preseason game, what would be your plan and why?
Continuing that momentum and giving him some of these defined reads and throws like he saw in his debut, with upping the ante a bit, taxing him a little bit. Now, okay, it's one thing, we're going to give you these easy defined throws. Now we're going to ask you to do a little bit more. We're going to ask you to make some more difficult reads. We're going to give you a bigger chunk of the playbook to run, because at some point you've got to keep developing and getting better. And so I think you want to say, I'd say second quarter into the third quarter a bit, play a bit more. Ask him to do more from a mental standpoint. Ask him to make some tougher reads, tougher throws. Maybe give him some spread situations. I'd love to see him get a two-minute drill, if possible. Now, the Patriots were able to do that with Jared Stidham. I think that's a great thing to get young quarterbacks to execute, because, you know, that's when a lot of it is on you. You know, when you've got to make those calls, you've got to read the wristband and make the reads and the throws and the decisions and the play calls. So that's always a good thing to test rookie quarterbacks, young quarterbacks with. So that's how I would try to handle it. Give him more to do. Ask him to do more. Put more on his plate mentally. Make him make some difficult throws. Attack the middle of the field a little bit. Give him a two-minute drill. Let him play second and third quarter.
And that's for Daniel Jones. What about for Eli, who I'm suspecting is going to play a little bit more than one series?
I think you've got to let Eli have the first quarter. I think you've got to, again, let him sort of get into the flow of a game a bit. Ask him to make some throws from the pocket, because his one real passing attempt was a boot action play where he got outside of the pocket. You know, so let him get some confidence in the offensive line and the guys in front of him. I'd say, you know, first quarter into second is kind of what I'd want to see.
All right. Sounds good, Mark. Thank you so much for coming on the program with us. All right, Giant fans, on that note, I want to thank Mark Schofield for coming on. Great stuff as always. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. We will be back on Monday with a new show. I hope you have a great weekend, and we will talk to you then.